Hello, A3 Nation, and welcome back to Ask an Alum with your host, Tierra M. Davis. As always, I have something extra special in store for you in the form of a career conversation. Now, here's the thing. Just because the career that I'm discussing may not be exactly what you want to do, doesn't mean there isn't a gem or several gems within the story. I selected this one just for you. Hey friends, in undergrad, I had an opportunity to create a summer research fellowship on Afro-textured hair. The work explored natural hair as a political statement. A cool project, but this is not about academia. Every Sunday, my housemates and I would gather our monies and purchase groceries. I distinctively remember purchasing really cheap food that was filling, sometimes tasty and delicious, but held no nutritional value. And I knew it was bad. We all collectively knew it was bad, but we didn't have an alternative. I also don't think that we understood the lifelong impact eating like that would have on our bodies. It's like, you know, we have this certain amount of money, this is what we're gonna purchase, and then that was that. So our go-to was something called pastasides. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. It's kind of like rice-a-roni or like, I don't know the other one. There's another one like pastaroni, but essentially you get water and you add it to the little mixture and then boom, shrimp scampi or something similar to that. But you can, I remember we could never have the leftovers. So we always had to eat all of it in one sitting because pastasides don't really reheat well. Or if you do try to reheat it, it's like rock hard or it tastes like cardboard or it doesn't taste like anything, right? And so like thinking about that, we were like, something is not right with this, but it's like, this is what we can afford. So our food was either chalked with like lots of salt or lots of sugar, and which is the recipe for hypertension and diabetes, which really plagues African-American communities and people of color. So it's not that we didn't know better, but at the time we couldn't afford to do better, or so we thought. Or maybe we could, we just opted not to. I'm not really certain because it was several years ago. It took years to unlearn a lot of the unhealthy eating habits that I developed in college, before college, and just growing up in South Texas. Was it South Texas? Houston, Texas. I understand now that, you know, if I don't commit to the learning process when it comes to eating healthy and listening to my body, the impacts will often leave me, my body, or people who are eating like me, leave it disease-ridden and often end in death, you know? So my guest and I know firsthand from familiar experiences from people in our family or people that we're close to who did not eat a certain way or did not really take care of their bodies, and sometimes those things are detrimental. So I want to take this opportunity to remind you, friends, because you guys are my people, you're my family, go for your walks, do whatever physical activity you can to get your body moving, drink your water, eat your veggies, limit your salt and sugar intake. Please go out for your annual checkups, and if you need to also book an appointment to do any mental health work, that is also important as well. All right, I have to get it out there because I love y'all and I want y'all to know this, but on to more exciting things. My guest today is a whole doctor. I'ma say it again. She's a whole doctor. I'm so proud. And we have the same name. So her name is Tierra, my name is Tierra. I really tried not to act like a groupie throughout the entire interview, and I had to edit a lot of those groupie moments out, but I'm such a fan of Dr. Range because I'm just in awe of her. She's really brilliant and she's just so kind. She's so kind-hearted. All right, bio. My guest today, Tierra Range, has a dynamic personal and professional journey to understanding health and taking her experiences and using it to propel her career. My favorite quote from the interview was, my driving force is patient care and patient education. So she's not only treating symptoms, but her practice is whole person-centered. She's teaching, ensuring that her patients are in the know when it comes to their health. For me, that's going above and beyond. Again, she beautifully navigates the personal and the professional. Oftentimes in the interviews, we're just getting the professional, but she kind of goes back and forth to let you know, like, this is who I am in personal spaces, and then this is who I am in professional spaces. And it's nice to get both sides of it because we don't always get those in our interviews. And so we talk about her journey getting into medical school, working through medical school, and then finally completing her education and starting her residency program. And then she talks about this moment where someone's like, doctor, and she's like, who me? And it was it was just such a powerful moment that, like, yes, all of your accomplishments have led to this dynamic moment. And yes, you, girl, you are a doctor. Tierra, Ask an Alum stands for you and everything you're doing to impact your community. Wonderful, wonderful conversation. Thank you for being so transparent and candid. One final thing for you all. Her episode is spliced into two parts. I want to apologize in advance for some of the internet drops in part one of the conversation. But again, it's not going to take away from the learning experience. I just listened to it. It's going to be fine. Like, there's going to be some glitches, but just hang in there because, ooh, there's my phone. There are gems in there. If you're thinking about medical school, this one is for you. If you have ears, this one is definitely for you. Later, gang. I was looking for, you know, things about your background, but when I did search your name, there was like all of these different awards about like how wonderful and how great you are. So I was wondering if you can talk to us about how you were able to develop such a dynamic work process.
Oh, sure. So I guess developing a dynamic work process is something that it takes time and it takes practice, and practice makes perfect. It's a combination of things, including planning and, you know, making an ability to be the kind of person that you want to be rather than the person that you are, if that makes sense. For example, like, I'm not a morning person, but I make myself a morning person because there's only so many hours in a day. And if I plan it out right, then I'll be able to get everything done. But that comes with some sacrifice. So sacrifice is involved with that as well. When it comes to planning, I make sure I have to-do lists always down on my iPhone in the notes section of my iPhone. And I organize it out by hour. And I really just try to keep my life organized like that. And I've noticed that that really helps keep me on track, keeps me focused. I have big goals, but also little goals. So when it comes to things like awards and things like that, that may be something that I see in my future as a goal, but I try to stay focused on the here and now, because the more that I work hard in the present, the more likely I am to achieve those goals in the future.
What time are you waking up?
So it depends on the day. For example, I'm about to start nights, so for a night's day, I wouldn't be waking up until around maybe 3 or 4 in the afternoon. But on a typical day, when I'm not on nights, we have to be at the hospital by 6:30 a.m. So I'm probably waking up around 4:45.
So what time do you go to bed if you're waking up at 4:45?
Well, that's really dependent too on what time I end the day. So I have much more of an ability to go to bed around, let's say, 8 or 9. But if I'm a late stay and I don't get off until around 7 or 8, then I'm probably not going to go to bed until around 10 or 10:30.
So thinking about this life, is this what you wanted to do when you graduated undergrad, or did you decide that in undergrad?
So I knew going into undergrad that I either wanted to be a PhD research doctor or an MD physician doctor. And by the time I graduated from med school, I kind of settled on MD PhD. And the goal was to start out medical school, see how I felt about it, and if I was still interested in going the MD PhD route, then at the end of my first year, I would apply for the PhD portion. But once I got started into medical school, my interest changed and I realized that, you know, clinical research was something I was more passionate about than bench work research, and you don't have to have that PhD component to do that. So I just stuck with the MD. So for the most part, yes, I'm doing what I wanted to do coming out of undergrad.
So an MD PhD, it's like 4 years plus 7 years?
It's 4 years plus an unknown number of years. It's really dependent on how your PhD process is going, what research project you choose to do your doctoral work in. And so that part can take anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
And then it's the 4 plus 3 to 5.
Wow, that's a lot of school. You must really like school then.
I really do like school. I really do. So starting residency is a big transition because I am still learning. I'm learning on the job all the time, but it's much different than being in the classroom. And even though the last 2 years of medical school are less so classroom learning, you know, there's still exams and things like that, that come fairly often. And so it's kind of weird thinking about transitioning out of that phase.
Okay. So I imagine in high school, undergrad, you were like usually a top student or always at least among the top students. And then when you go to medical school, basically all your peers are top students, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So how are you able to like thrive in a space where everyone is like grade A students when you're used to being like the number one grade A student?
Sure. So that's a great question. I'll never forget, actually, when I was at Centenary, I was an RA, and one of my fellow RAs and I were talking, and she said, "There's a lot of tiers in med school," and that's definitely true. Everybody is working to achieve those same goals, and it can become competitive. But I think the best way to make sure that you reach your goals is to stay in your own race and don't worry about anyone else. If you think of it from the perspective of only being in a race with yourself, then it becomes much easier to achieve those major milestones. A lot of the awards that I won while in medical school, I won through an organization that I created on my own. There were a lot of people who had already achieved avenues of success through systems that were already in place at my medical school. So I carved out a place for myself. And as long as you're willing to do things like that, you can always reach those bigger goals, make those milestones and reach those milestones that you're trying to achieve.
So you were able to build a community around you.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely. I
so,
think that's key.
go ahead. You said what?
Oh, I said, I think that's key.
Because on your YouTube channel, you talk about the detriments of isolating yourself when you get to medical school. Can you talk about that? Have you experienced that? Maybe not from yourself, but something that you've seen from other people?
For sure. So, community is truly key to getting through the entire medical school process, even while you're an undergrad, recognizing that you are in a race by yourself, but you're in a race by yourself with a bunch of other people. Similarly to how everyone is going to do a marathon, let's say the goal of crossing the finish line. And so, you know, recognizing that and being able to talk to your peers, or if you don't even feel comfortable talking to your peers, having some sort of support system in the form of family, friends, whatever kind of relationships help you achieve that community, and reaching out to them when you feel like you're getting lost. I have been very fortunate through having that community here. You know, I stayed here for medical school, and so my parents were always great resources to talk to. My fiance was somebody I could always talk to. I joined a Bible study group with some of my fellow classmates, and that was a really great way to reach out and just have something different to talk about. And, you know, come together in a common faith to just praise and worship and spend time away from medicine so that when I come back to medicine, I'm giving it my all.
Nice. So, how did Centenary prepare you for medical school?
Oh my gosh, Centenary prepared me in so many ways. I would say from day one, they started preparing me for medical school. As I'm sure you already know, you're assigned an advisor within your major.
I've
And,
just got here, so I don't know a lot about,
oh,
yeah.
okay. Okay, well, welcome. I guess I'll give you kind of like a rundown. Whenever you start at Centenary, they assign you an advisor in your field. And it's not necessarily the person who's over the pre-med track. I was a biochemistry major, so I had a chemistry professor, Dr. Kisich, who was my pre-medical advisor, or excuse me, my major advisor. And I told him, look, I'm interested in medicine. I don't know if I want to do research or medicine, but I know that if I do go into medicine, it's important for me to have those courses under my belt. And so he helped me figure out how to get my schedule just right throughout the 4 years and graduate with all the requirements I needed to go into medical school. In addition to that advisor, there's also a pre-medical advisor, Dr. Cheerheart, and he's always available to answer questions. He leads the AED, which is the Pre-Medical Honor Society, and has so many amazing opportunities to get involved in different community service activities, as well as to meet different people in the medical field. Dr. Cheerheart would set up interview sessions where the Dean of Admissions at LSU Medical School came to Centenary and would pick two students to practice interview skills with, me being one of them while throughout my 4 years. So, that's an invaluable experience that I don't know if many other colleges provide. They have a mock medical school interview day through the pre-medical advisory committee. And that is an excellent process as well. And they give you feedback and they tell you how you can improve. So just throughout the entire 4 years, everybody has been so helpful. The community service opportunities, I mean, it's built into the curriculum at Centenary, so it makes it that much easier to for you to check off that really required box to apply for medical school. And then, last but not least, the courses. The actual course curriculum is very preparatory for medical school. They've gotten to the point to where they've even started teaching the classes in the same way that they really teach you the classes in medical school. So it's not a shock whenever you start med school on day one.
Okay, so as a student who went through the program, is there something that they can do a little bit better, something that the program is missing that you're like, ah, this is, I wish I had this foundational skill set when I once I got to medical school?
Sure. I mean, I know it's kind of cliche to say, but I honestly don't have anything to suggest as far as improvements go, just because they are always so on top of it with the changes that are made on the medical school side. They have such a great relationship with the medical school here in Shreveport. So if there's any change, if there's any change in requirements, if they hear of anything new that they need to be preparing their students for, they do that. I've had professors that have, since I have graduated and I've been in medical school, professors have reached out to me and said, hey, I want to prepare my students better for medical school. Is there anything that I should be teaching that I didn't teach whenever you were a student here? And they are, I mean, they make that change immediately. They do this the summer before they even start the next calendar year. So I think, with people who are that invested and who care that much about making sure that you're prepared, there's nothing I would change about that.
So outside of what the program is doing for your learning experience, what should students be doing to help themselves to prepare?
Sure. So, even outside of the requirement to graduate that Centenary has with community service, students should definitely still be doing their own forms of community service. There are tons of opportunities through Centenary to do community service, even through being an RA. I remember, there were RA activities that were community service. Just getting involved. This not only is helping you in the sense of adding hours of community service to your resume, but it's also getting you in the practice of serving. And the idea of being a doctor is it's a completely service job. So it's preparing you for a lifelong career of doing that, of being in that service environment. In addition to that, clinical shadowing is very important. The professors at Centenary can help you with that, but I think it's a lot more empowering to be able to find those opportunities on your own. There are lots of opportunities to do that throughout the community. The medical school has a diversity affairs office, which has its own set of programs that you can get involved with and get tapped into mentors, and you can shadow them. You can do research projects with them. You could also shadow physicians through the MLK Health Clinic. You could just reach out to different doctors in the community and ask if you can just follow them around. You'd be surprised. A lot of them are very, very excited to have somebody want to learn more about what they do on a daily basis, and they'll let you tag along whenever you want. In addition to shadowing, I would also say patient interaction is also really great. There's only so much that you can do as a student in college, as far as patient interaction goes, but find out what you can do. I would suggest reaching out to different hospitals and finding out what is the most patient interaction oriented activity that you can be involved in, and volunteer in it. Can do something in which you make money, but if you volunteer in it, then you're killing two birds with one stone. You're getting that community service and you're also interacting with patients. Also, research. Research is not a requirement through Centenary, but it's something that a lot of the professors in the science department will continually stress to you. Hey, this summer we have a lot of different opportunities for research. Make sure to reach out to one of us if you want to get involved in one of the projects. The medical school has tons of opportunity as well through their BRI and or their Biomedical Research Institute. And getting involved in research is it's becoming something that's much more essential for getting into med school as it becomes more competitive over the years.
So are you just cold emailing like a random list of hospitals and doctors and spaces and places?
Honestly, that's what
Ah.
I did. I did. It was the summer before starting my second or third year of undergrad, and I just pulled out a phone book and I went down the list. Now, with technology, you can always just Google it and see what hospitals are in your area. But you can do area too, who don't get as many people reaching out to them because people are so often going to LSU for those opportunities. So you're a lot more likely if you reach out to private hospitals to reach someone and get those kind of niche opportunities to work with patients in a unique way.
Wow. So it seems like Centenary has it on lock in terms of getting you prepared for medical school.
Yes.
Now, can you talk to us about some of the challenges once students get to medical school?
Sure. I guess the main challenge that students will face when they arrive to medical school is time management. What people will describe your first year of medical school as is being hit with a fire hose or a fire hydrant hose of information all at once. I guess to give you an example, when I was at Centenary, there was a book that we used and it was called Biochemistry. It was a big, thick, gray book. And we covered that book over an entire year through both Biochemistry 1 and Biochemistry 2. The information that we covered in that book, we also covered in medical school, but it took us a year to cover in undergrad, and it took us 3 weeks to cover that same book in medical school. So you are taking a lot of information and you are going through at rapid pace, but they still require you to understand those minute details in the same way that you would if you were tested on it in undergrad. So that requires a lot of time management adjustment to being able to take in that information and learning it very quickly. Learning how to do that now, starting in undergrad, will help immensely when they get to medical school. That comes with doing things like learning how to review for the MCAT while also studying your classroom material, learning how to juggle community service hours and being involved in leadership on campus and also studying in the classroom, so reviewing for the MCAT. Just adding on layers to your schedule now and realizing what works about that, what doesn't, what works best for you. Things like that over time will help you for your first day.
So is it hard because of all the material? Because my follow-up question was, everyone says medical school hard is hard. Is it really hard? But from what you're describing, it seems real tricky.
So I will say it's not a myth. It's very, very difficult. There's long hours. There's a lot of, and the tests, like I was saying, they cover massive amounts of information, but still require retention of those minute details. And it's very fast paced. But what is a myth is that it is unachievably hard. You can do it. It's definitely doable as long as you stay on top of your coursework, as long as you're able to manage your time very well. Like we talked about earlier, get tapped into a really good community of people who keep you encouraged, and surrounding yourself with that good support team. That support team can include mentors. There's tons of physicians who were mentoring me and would tell me, you know, stay encouraged, do not get off track, don't worry, you're doing fine. It doesn't seem like it, but you're doing just fine. And you know, if you're faith driven like me, I always think back to Philippians 4:13, which says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." If you really keep that in mind, if you keep that in your heart, and you always remind yourself of that, you'll do just fine.
So one of the techniques that I really like that you use when studying is it seems like you organize your lectures, or you correct me if I'm wrong, you organize your lectures, and then you said you like to look at them at least 4 times before an exam, right? Is that an undergrad technique or a med school technique?
So, it's something that I started doing in undergrad, especially towards the end of undergrad when I was taking those upper level courses like comparative anatomy or physical chemistry. And it's something that I perfected. Sorry for that noise. That was an email. But it's something that I perfected while I was in medical school. There's not necessarily one technique that specifically works best for everyone, but whatever you do, repeat, repeat, repeat. I'd say number one, start out with trying to find out what your learning style is, whether that's auditory or kinesthetic or visual or maybe a combination, and then repeat. There's something that me and my classmates would always repeat to ourselves while we were in medical school, and it's something that one of our med school professors said, and it's that repetition is the father of learning. So if writing notes is the way that you learn, rewrite them as many times as it takes. If watching videos is something that helps you learn, rewatch them until you can see and hear those parts of the video whenever you're not watching it. If it takes going through note cards, go through those note cards as many times as it takes until you remember. For me, that magic number was 4 times. And it was through a combination of things because I learned through a combination of ways. Watch the lectures after class, so I'm seeing and I'm hearing. I would do that at least twice. And then I would review the note cards several times as well. So all in all, that's 4 different ways that I'm learning the material just through repetition. That means that there's no way that you're going to forget what you are seeing and you are hearing and you are writing over and over again. There's so much information, so it's hard to keep everything in. But what I've noticed also helps is if rather than getting super bogged down into the details, if you start out with trying to understand the concept, that will take you much further than most of the details. You can pretty much discern or work your way through the details as long as you understand the major concepts. So like if you were building like a huge Lego tower and it was really massive, you couldn't build it without having that major foundation set up first full of Legos. And the same goes for anything in medicine. You have to lay down a very strong foundation, and then you can build on that over time.
That concludes our podcast episode for this week. Thanks for listening, and please, please share with a friend or colleague. Until next time, when you spot an alum, ask them about their journey.